Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge, and this is Skylines, the City Metric podcast. This week we are going to talk about an exciting, I think, under-discussed topic in the world of, even within the world of kind of cities and urbanism and all that stuff. You don't often spend much time thinking about bollards, do you? I think bollards are probably an underrated feature of the modern city. So in a bit we've got a guest who has in fact become one of the world's leading experts on bollards and given public speeches about it. But in the meantime, I thought it'd be nice to have someone tell me some other things. So I want Once again, I've dragged my colleague India Bourke down to the podcasting dungeon to set her some homework about to go and learn interesting things about street furniture, and now we're going to find out what she's learned. Hello, India. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. So, you told me you're doing a podcast about bollards.
Yes. Are you pro bollard? Are bollards good?
No.
What's wrong with bollards? You wouldn't get far in life without bollards.
Wait to hear how Ed defends bollards. I read his piece on City Metric. And I don't get it. Why would you want a bollard when you could have a tree?
Because sometimes a tree isn't enough. I don't know. I have. I may not have a good answer for that one.
So
I mean, like, but trees suck up carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes you want.
Do bollards suck up carbon dioxide?
Maybe sometimes you want the carbon dioxide. Trees drop leaves everywhere. And
true.
Like
bollards
and
drop
like
less
you know
leaves.
Sap and stuff. Bollards don't tend to molt. So that's
true. I'll give you that one.
I'm not going to make a very strong argument in favour of the bollard. Why don't you tell us about trees?
So my trump card for why trees are better than bollards is reading Ed's piece on City Metric. The very word
don't give
bollard
away who the guest is.
Comes from a tree shaped thing. So. Trees are the original bollards.
This is literally something that he says on the tape. You're just like spoiling his whole routine. So we might as well not use it.
I'm trailing it. building anticipation.
So okay, if the best thing about a tree is that it's a bit like a bollard.
It's way better than a bollard.
It doesn't really say much for nature, that's all I'm
people
saying.
People love trees. Trees have personality all over the country. Like historic trees around Britain, people go and leave pennies on and scratch their names into. The oldest tree in Britain's over 1,000 years old. I mean, that's history in its, like, in its being. They talk to each other.
Trees talk to each other.
Yeah, they do. So scientists have recently discovered they use networks of fungi in the soil to exchange information about what they need, and then they're like, hey tree over there, give me a little bit more of this, or can I have some more of this, and they're like, they communicate
using fungi.
Mm.
Is this like passenger pigeons? Trees have fungi instead of passenger pigeons. I'm really confused as to how this works. Is it legit, like chemicals?
I like using a nature metaphor or simile for another nature simile.
But I literally do not understand how a tree is communicating with another tree using fungi. Give me some more to go on here.
To be honest, I don't understand either. But the scientists say it happens and they know things, John.
But like, is it like chemical signals or like?
Yes, it's chemicals, but okay. Going through the fungi in the soil.
So it's
through
not,
their roots.
It's
I
not
assume.
Like, it's not literally, I'm thirsty, pass it on. It's like.
I kind of think it is.
Oh,
kind
it is,
of that,
it
yeah.
is that. Okay. but in chemical form?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, obviously, that's more forests and street trees. well, maybe street trees do it too. I don't think there's been a study on that subject on street trees, but street trees are awesome because most of us live in cities. So not only do we see them, which there's been loads of studies that say that improves your mental health if you can look out on greenery every day, but they literally keep us younger, one study has shown. They also, really importantly, the way the climate's heading at the minute, they can cool down neighbourhoods anywhere up to 2 degrees Celsius on a hot day. So if, you know, heat waves cool. Going to be really massive in the future across the world. So you really, really need trees in cities.
Is that mostly by providing shade? I mean, what's the mechanism there?
I don't know the exact mechanism. Shade, I'm sure, would be a massive, massive part of it, yes. And they raise house prices.
Oh, yeah, well...
Streets with trees.
This is the City Metric podcast, so in many ways that's a case against the trees in this particular environment. Mm. It's like, cut down more bloody trees, really.
No, plant more trees. So.
Yeah, but if they're going to make housing less affordable, like...
Oh, John, that's a terrible argument. Come on.
I'm just saying, if trees are contributing to the housing crisis, or maybe they can do their bit, maybe tree houses is the way forward. It's like, it can't be that long before we get a piece in the Daily Mail that says, you know, is this tree house the solution to the housing crisis for millennials? That's the kind of thing that is probably, they've probably already done that one.
I'd love to live in a tree house. Did you have a tree house as a kid?
I didn't. We only really had one tree in the garden. It wasn't that big.
Yeah, we also had a small tree.
It's like, but I think you probably had more, you probably had a bigger garden.
I didn't have that big a garden, but it did have fields around it.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes the sheep would get into the garden. So there are all these trees in cities, but it's quite hard to keep track of them. And obviously, if people do want to know how many trees there are and where they are for things like house prices, but also for, you know, for the government needing to know where to plant more and etc. So the City of London has mapped some of them. It's mapped 700,000 on data from 2014, I think. And you can go online and it's interactive and you can zoom in on the street you live and see what trees are on your street and what species they are. But it's not all of them. I did it for my street, and the really, really beautiful weeping willow at the end of, like, near my house was not on it, which was sad. But also, apparently there's 8 million trees in London in total, so only 700,000 are on this
map.
That's
nearly as many trees as people. That is amazing.
It is amazing. It's great. But it feels important to map them for lots of reasons.
It is an outstanding map, that one. It's just as a piece of cartography, it's like weirdly beautiful. The footprint of all these trees.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely when you've got points, dots on a map that actually represent a tree and you can learn about the species, but there's so far to go with mapping them, and that kind of probably is a good indicator of how under-resourced this general subject is in local government. We don't even know where they are, so clearly no one really gives that much of a monkey's about them.
Before we move on, just one thing I think is very characteristic of London. If you ever go on high ground in the suburbs of London, so I've noticed this up by the New River in Haringey. I've noticed this on Horsenden Hill out west. If you're ever on high ground and you kind of look at London, you kind of can't see it because it's like often the tree line, the trees are taller than the houses. So like from, you don't have to be that high up before it's like very difficult to even see London because it's all just hidden by trees. And you don't have that problem in like Paris or New York or whatever. So it's just a strange thing about this city that's everything's only two stories high, really. Anyway.
No, there's gorgeous trees in London. There's one in Barnes that's apparently it's been alive since 1680, and the plane trees on the embankment, they're pretty, you know, they've species that originated in 16th century Spain.
Not the individual trees.
I think just the species in that case.
It is kind of crazy. There's like a 300-year-old tree in like
But this is part of the problem is actually keeping these trees alive, keeping them pruned, as you moan about the leaves, mopping up the leaves, looking after them, making sure they don't become dangerous, is a cost for local governments. So in Sheffield, that whole situation has become really political over the last few years.
Really? Sheffield? What's going on in Sheffield?
So the Labour-led Sheffield Council, as I understand it, needed to upgrade the city's streets and roads. There was lots of potholes, etc. So it used a private finance initiative to employ a private company called AMI.
Amy.
Amy.
It's pronounced Amy.
Thanks.
I used to write about private finance initiative. So,
unfortunately,
I'm painfully aware of what all the companies are called and what they do. Anyway, please go on.
No, you'll understand what's going on better than I will then. So they paid this company to sort out the streets. And that company that decided to remove over 5,000 roadside trees, which it kind of claims are dead or dying or dangerous in some way. But that's already an awful lot. And an FOI request has shown that actually half of the city's 36,000 trees are earmarked to go, which is huge. I mean, you're deforesting cities, really. And we've just talked about how good they are in all kinds of ways.
Are they going to replace those or is it just removal?
So a lot of these are couple of hundred years old trees. They're old trees. They can actually, as assets, they're valued at anything from like 50K up. Like, you can't just replace that. You can replace it with a sapling, which could cost, you know, minimal to replace.
But that's going to take decades to...
It's going to take decades.
To perform the same function.
And actually, cynically, you could argue, you know, by cutting down all these old trees, you remove the costs of having to upkeep them.
Mm. Well, it's, yeah, presumably saplings are less trouble. They're less likely to...
Exactly.
..to drop leaves everywhere. They're less likely to bits drop off on them and passing traffic or whatever, so...
Yeah, so the whole thing's been building and building. The council refused to terminate the tree felling, because it said if it terminated the contract with this company, it could be liable for millions in penalties. So protesters have been trying to save the trees, and one person set up a rape alarm as a kind of metaphor for what's happening to the trees. People are really, really passionate about it in Sheffield. And some of them have even been taken to court because, you know, the council says they're obstructing, etc. The current situation is it's paused. The felling is paused because Michael Gove in the central government has stepped in and said tree felling has to stop, and it has the government support. But it all still seems a little bit up in the air. A Green Party councillor kind of is in The Guardian has said Labour, the council, has only agreed to stop the felling because of the upcoming May election. So the pause is quite electorally handy to kind of make this issue go away for a bit. So huge tension.
This was always the difficulty with PFI, though, is that you've signed a contract. And if you want to breach that contract, there will be massive penalty clauses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost certain that Amy, like any other contractor, will be able to afford quite good lawyers.
Mm.
And it's not altogether clear that the council will have the money to get good lawyers. Mm-hmm. It's probably a good argument for not signing these 30-year contracts in the first place, to be honest. But there we are. My favourite PFI story was £800 to replace a light fitting.
Wow.
And there's like loads of stuff
like
that.
What was so special about the light fitting?
Nothing. It's just like, there was a line in the contract that says, you know, this is a variation. This will cost £800. It's just like price gouging.
Gosh, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Anyway, should we learn about some bollards?
My name's Ed Jefferson. I'm a semi-regular contributor to City Metric. I usually write about things so dull or strange that no one else would bother to write about them.
You say this, but this particular article, which we're going to talk about now, actually has created a speaking opportunity for you this evening.
Yes.
And you are now, I think, you are probably like the official expert in the bollard.
Yeah, I would say that there's an academic I referenced in the article who's done like some proper actual research debunking an old myth about street bollards, that the original London street bollards are supposed by some to be captured cannons from the Battle of Trafalgar, which a guy called Dr. Martin Evans has actually done the legwork of working out what happened to captured cannons and where the London authorities at the time would have actually bought their scrap metal, and has deduced that sadly there aren't any actual cannons from the Battle of Trafalgar. There are cannons.
So what you're saying is that actually there is a real expert.
Yes, who I think he's looking at. Yeah, he's academic at Cambridge.
But to take other people's hard work and then attempt to monetize it by making a few snarky jokes is the City Metric way.
But it's journalism, isn't it?
Yeah. So the article you wrote, the sort of history of the bollard, was called "How Does the Humble Street Bollard Connect Napoleon to Carillion via Welsh Devolution?" So we'll kind of work through that. But like, What, give us some sense of what this talk you're about to give is.
Talk I'm doing tonight, which probably will not be tonight.
It's March 22nd as we record this, so by the time you hear it.
I am available for weddings, bar mitzvahs, if anyone else wants to hear
any of your bollard-themed personal life events.
But yeah, there's a City of London-themed stand-up night at the City Centre in the City of London. Of which bollards will be only one of the thrilling topics being discussed.
Do you know what else there is? Is there going to be someone doing like a whole routine about the fact that none of the roads are called road or anything like that?
Unless it's all me. Like, if I have to come up with something on a...
And what's the deal with our special tax status? It'll be that kind of thing, yeah.
There is a guy that you might be interested in, that there's a guy doing something about trying to walk in a perfect circle around the City of London.
I've done that actual circle.
Oh, no, but in the City of London.
Oh, in the City of London. Okay, that's harder. Yeah, well, it sounds like there's all sorts of exciting content, which I hope you will steal and repurpose for City Metric purposes.
Definitely.
But yeah, so come on, you did basically a history of the bollard for us. What did you learn?
My general thesis about the world has become that there isn't anything so, like, apparently boring that you can't find something interesting about if you stare at it long enough. So if it's, that'd be bollards or train timetables, that you can find patterns or context or history that there's something interesting in it. And either that's true, or if you stare long enough at street bollards, you'll just sort of have some sort of psychic break, and then the results of that might be entertaining enough to get away with whatever you were trying to do in the first place.
I'm starting to worry that City Metric has literally broken you.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's start from first principles. What is a bollard? What's it for?
Well, initially, a bollard was for mooring a ship. The earliest bollards, which is possibly why the link with unused cannons loaded off the ship and then immediately put into the ground to moor further ship. But sometime in the I think it's around the 18th century, they started coming to use in cities basically to stop horse-drawn carriages killing people and mucking up the pavements, basically.
So they're effectively there as a barrier.
Yeah, and since like that sounds sort of quite prosaic, but like there's a guy, a mayor of Bogota, who's very much engaged in the war against motorists, and one of his initiatives was to put up street bollards, basically because everyone was just parking on the pavements, and he actually was quoted as linking this to the very dignity of being human, was to be able to walk down the street without a car getting in the way, which is sort of... The humble street bollard is actually, it's there to preserve human dignity, according to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, I suppose what they actually do is they kind of preserve spaces for pedestrians, or arguably pedestrians and cyclists, but, you know, like, sort of human-powered travel as opposed to, you know, motorised vehicles of any sort. They kind of block off at certain spaces. Is that the kind of...
Yeah, and I guess it depends on the city as to how much that is necessary, as to whether, like, whether in the City of London you would get cars running down the pavement without them, or whether it's actually much more just about safety these days. Although I've seen some unusual behaviour from car drivers in London. Definitely someone driving along the bank of the river in Richmond at once, which apparently needs more bollards.
Well, I mean, I suppose people do still more things. I mean, not like big ships, but actually... I'm kind of flicking through your article as we do this, and I've got a slight problem in that, like, there are things here I'm about to cite as interesting facts and get you to talk about, and then I realise that it's in fact you taking the piss. So I'm assuming that the word bollard is not literally derived from the Middle English for thing a bit like a tree trunk.
Oh, no, it is. No, that's
is that
an actual
true?
I'm pretty sure that's an actual fact.
That's an actual fact?
Yeah, no, I do my research. I look up... That's the starting point of any tedious article. You pick the word, you look up the word the article's about in the dictionary and say, the Oxford English Dictionary defines the bollard as a...
I can tell you that the City of London Technical Manual specifies that bollards provide protection to both paving and buildings and offer safety from pedestrians.
Yeah.
For pedestrians, not
well,
from
although
pedestrians.
Although I'm disappointed in the City of London Technical Manual, really, because it only lists the... I think it's the C3 and the D3, which are two kinds of bollards that you will see in the City of London, but they're not even the most interesting bollards. They're not the ones I'm really interested in. Are the ones in so the City of London bollards, the ones that interest me, and part of what I'll be talking about tonight is that you have a lot of them have the year they were installed on, which I think, well, interesting might be pushing it, but they do mean it is a fun thing that you can collect if you like to spend a lot of time walking around London and try and get a complete set of all the years. I got 2017 the other day. I was very excited.
This reminds me of like when I was a child. I don't know if they still do this, but packets of Smarties used to have on the inside of the lid, they'd have a letter of the alphabet. And I spent a long time trying to collect all the letters and I could never complete the set. I eventually took to like writing them on like the white ones at the other end, which was cheating. How many years have you managed to collect here? Like, is there a spreadsheet?
Yeah, well, I've got as far as 1988. There are a few gaps. Well, actually, there is one I've got. There's one in Smithfield that says, I think it's 1873 on it. I'm slightly sceptical as to whether it's original, but it's the only one I've found. There are some others, apparently, that I've not personally seen that were to mark some anniversary. But the thing that the year does sort of tell you, like, is that, well, they suggest sometimes a story, and that I felt, finding recent ones is quite good, because a bollard doesn't necessarily need to be replaced so often, so I was quite excited to find it's like 2010, but then right next to it was a 2011, and it does make you think, okay, there's a story here, clearly, like, what, did they put one bollard, and then something happened, and they had to install another one?
Or, like, maybe they put in two bollards, someone crashed into
one,
yeah. Well, maybe that's your next piece of research.
Yeah.
So something else you talk about a bit in the article is the role of bollards in civic identity.
Yeah, I mean, they are, the City of London is kind of, they are very sort of ornately designed, the City of London bollards. And it's also interesting crossing the border, like there are streets where you can walk down and you will pass these red, white and silver bollards with the year marked on them. And then suddenly you'll notice you're just looking at like black and white striped ones, and then if you look up at their street sign, and you're no longer in the city. And they used to, they were much more common as that kind of thing back in the day when the like wards of the City of London mattered a lot more, as to kind of, you know, what I guess in terms of sort of what sort of services were offered where. And
the City of London has really infuriatingly weird borders, though. It's one of those, like, you can't tell. It's not like most of the time you don't cross a physical feature, except for the Thames itself. You don't tend to cross a physical feature and, like, know you've left the City of London.
Yeah,
it's just like,
although you can... The big giveaway is if you're on a major road is if there's a huge dragon for some reason.
Dragons.
That does seem to be the... For some reason, that's been decided as the demarcation. The bridges are in the City of London. So
no,
like...
some of them are, some of them aren't. I can't remember. London Bridge is definitely part of the City of London. I think possibly Southwark Bridges as well. But others, the boundary is halfway.
Yes, that could be correct. Although Tower Bridge is weird because the bridge is partly owned by the City, is at least partly owned by the City of London, or possibly wholly. But the North End doesn't actually land in the City of London, so neither end is in the City of London. Because I think the North End is just in Tower Hamlets.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Tower of London is in Tower Hamlets,
yes.
I believe. That's why, you know, Tower Hamlets
yes.
literally means
yeah,
the villages
you
around
get,
the tower.
If you live in the Tower Hamlets, as a tip, you can get into Tower of London for £1, or you used to be able to do when I lived there and then failed to do this. But that's as well as being able to use the library, you can go to the Tower of London really cheap.
I don't think we've got anything good in Islington. I should like find something else. So what have we missed on the? You mentioned Carillion. What's the story with the Carillion bollard?
There is the other place in the UK where you can go hunting for London bollards is Swanage. So there's a town in Dorset near what were a lot of quarries. They've brought a lot of stone for construction in the 1800s. There was a guy called George Burt and his uncle John Molam, who ran a construction firm. They came from Dorset, I believe, and they ran a construction firm in London doing all sorts of big Victorian projects, and they decided to get the stone from their hometown. Good local boys supporting the hometown industry. The problem is, if you filled ships with stone and you've taken them to London, once you take the stone off, the ships tend to not be very seaworthy. Basically, they would probably fall over because they would be kind of...
Centre of gravity
is
too high.
Yeah, so high in water. So you need some ballast. One thing they had access to was a lot of kind of scrap from construction, from the things they were pulling down, which included bollards. Nice heavy iron thing, so they loaded the ship up with, among other things, lots of bollards. And once they were back in Swanage, well, what can you do with a bollard? Use it as a bollard. So Swanage, the town of Swanage, is full of bollards marked City of London. In fact, they had so many that there are just like gateposts and stuff, like anything that you needed, something of that size, they would just kind of, you know, whack a hole in it or whatever you needed to do. And like, so an astonishing number of things in Swanage are old City of London bollards or bollards from other parts of London.
It's reminding me of like 101 uses for a dead cat, which was a popular toilet book in the 80s.
So the only book I could... There was actually a book about this, but sadly it did not go into... Did not have like funny illustrations of someone using a pet bollard. But anyway, the link to Crean is that George Burt and John Molan, their firm became Molan, which was a huge construction company. They repaired Buckingham Palace after it was bombed in the Second World War, and they built the current London Bridge. But that company, Molan, lasted until 2006 when it was bought by Crean, and so thus is no more because Crean has been defunct. So their legacy is, in terms of a company, is gone, but if you go to Swanage, you can see it. As in, their legacy is City of London bollards in Swanage High Street.
Oh, okay. And where does the Welsh devolution bit of the headline come into this?
This is a bizarre story sometimes when I research something odd like this, I'll just whack the topic into Hansard, the parliamentary record, just because occasionally you get something odd turns up. And once again, something odd did turn up. It was a debate about debate in the Lords about Welsh devolution, which I think would have been the first time in the 60s, I think, the 60s or early 70s. And a Lord's genuine objection was that he'd read the proposed bill several times, and it appeared to give power over bollards in London to the new Welsh authority.
What?
It wasn't really clear he didn't go into much further detail. So what he was worried that the Welsh were going to do to the bollards in London, because if indeed it was to put loads of dragons on them, it's kind of too late in the City of London, so...
I think the last thing you kind of talk about is art, bollards as art and picturesque. Is that going to come up in your lecture at all?
Well, sadly not really, because I'm limited to the City of London. I think the City of London bollards are interesting.
They're quite beautiful objects as bollards go.
And there are still various... shapes and sizes that they've been are still extant. There's about three or four all very common ones, but then there are, you can still see bollards about that were canon in the City of London. But elsewhere there are, people have taken on the bollard and seen if they can turn it into an actual artistic project. There's Anthony Gormley of casting hundreds of thousands of
himself,
versions of his own body.
He
has some bollards in... Bellenden in southeast London, the most entertaining nice place in southeast London. Bellenden, where he fittingly has had a studio at least, has a set of bollards, including one that looks like a willy, I think, and other highly amusing shapes. There's also a set in Goodwood near Chichester, where I grew up, apparently, of the same bollards. There's also a lady in who has some around St Pancras. Those are more about the projects about where they're installed. So there are two either side of a borough line and there's one on some church steps, and I'm not exactly sure what this exact statement was being made, but it's all to do with the space where you put the things. And so like one just arbitrarily in the middle of a square.
It's about physically marking out space in some way.
I guess it's just what happens if you just pick slightly arbitrary places to put your bars, which is no one really notices apart from me and some bloke from Londonister.
Okay, well, this has been fun. I've just got to end by asking you, what's your favourite bollard? I can't believe you haven't thought about this.
I think the thing where I've now become, like, I'm on the hunt for a set of the City of London years, so I think if, like, it will be the, like, I haven't found a 2018 one yet, so maybe there isn't one yet, maybe there haven't
been
any bollards.
We're only a couple of months in,
Although,
you could probably engineer it, so, like, if you rent a car,
Well, I mean, I can't drive, which is sort of like
that's
a
not,
boon, though, exactly.
That's not a problem if, like,
if the aim is to...
But yeah, well, wait long enough. I'm sure something will happen to require the replacement for bollards, so... There's not like, it's not like a vintage year thing. It's not like all the best bollards are like 2014 or something. It's like a...
Basically, like, I need someone else to have done the difficult legwork of kind of going into sort of like why there are hardly any bollards before 1988. And maybe it's because people suddenly started caring a lot more about safety post the 80s. Or maybe it's...
It might be an IRA thing.
Yeah, that's another possibility.
Because I remember at some point in my childhood, they were talking about the Ring of Steel around the City of London. I think that was partly about security checks, but I think it was also to kind of stop people like leaving major vehicles somewhere with bombs in them. So I think it might genuinely be connected to that. But
I know my favourite. I've just the ones in Leadenhall Market. They've got ones that are exactly like the City of London ones downtown in Dayton, but they're painted red for no particular reason, which is just really nice. I don't think there are any other in the city that are not just the standard black. So. Could have called Leadenhall Market.
Cool. Well, so the lesson here is that colourful bollards are better.
Yeah. Look out for them in more or less like any film that needs to kind of film something that looks vaguely foreign but doesn't want to go anywhere foreign, because Leadenhall Market will turn up.
And be on the lookout for Ed's new stand-up show, A Load of Old Bollards. Are you actually calling it that? Because I think you should.
I think that has been done. I don't know what to do with the... I just keep thinking about... J.G. Bollard. I don't know really what to do with that, but it seems like there is a joke there, but I don't know what it is.
It's a joke for a really bad webcomic,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, well, I don't think we're going to come to a natural conclusion. Should we just stop talking?
That seems sensible.
So just to wrap up, this week I asked the followers of the City Metric Twitter feed what their favourite piece of street furniture was, which turns out to have been a slightly silly question, because several of the best answers came with pictures, and pictures are not great on a sort of podcasting platform, but we'll work around that. James Ball, formerly of The Guardian and BuzzFeed, says, this is my James Ball impression, I was on a street once and they'd used inconsistent standards for bollards. It was so ridiculous. Some of them didn't even meet the 45cm curb guidance. And don't even get me started on the 150mm reflective band inconsistencies. I think that's quite a good impression of James. What do you reckon?
Something inside me is slowly dying. I don't understand how people can care this much about the circumference of a bollard. Sorry, James.
I don't. I'm fairly sure that James doesn't care this much, and he was mocking people who do. But we shall find out. He is quite the nerd. So, you know, hi James. He does listen to this podcast. So yeah. Anyway.
So Dave Kidneys tweeted. So there's a wool shop near me that knits covers for the bollards outside the shop. In December, they wear Santa hats. Now that's cute.
I mean, it's like also. I kind of worry
bonnets,
that like
Easter.
It does get a bit drizzly in December, so I'm worried that the bonnets are going to get like, you know, all soggy and stuff. But Daniel, dear God, what now? As he calls himself, wanted us to talk about erevs, the stretches of wire that Jewish communities use to sort of like basically define the inside of the house as a certain area of this. Are you aware of this?
No.
You know, there's a great bit about this in, I think it's the Yiddish Policeman's Union by Michael Chabon. But yeah, there's some rule in Orthodox Judaism about how there's certain things you can't do outside the house on the Sabbath. So they just kind of, there's a loophole to sort of define
the... Well, that's cool, you can extend the house.
Yeah, it's like, you know, nice. all this is kind of, this is the whole Jewish community's home now, which I think is a bit of a cheat, but there you go.
So Dan Anderson says, one for the best column, the drinking fountains in Rome, and he's got a picture of a bollard with a tap coming out of it.
I don't see what's
wrong. Is it a tap? It's just a drinking fountain.
Yeah.
It's a bollard-shaped drinking fountain. It's very pretty. It's like iron and...
But I mean,
wrought iron.
I mean, I guess there are two reasons that this.
You'd have to
you
be
really,
quite small to get.
Yeah,
down
I mean,
there.
Firstly, it's quite low.
It's more for a bucket.
It's
than
a dog kind of height one, and also it kind of does look like.
Oh, is that why he likes it?
I think, yeah.
Oh.
Okay. While we're on the picture ones, Someone called Hester says that the University of Cambridge has been demonstrating its bottomless bollard budget and sent a picture of, like, I mean, you really don't need that many bollards in that smaller space. I assume this is this is an attempt to stop people cycling through at high speeds by the university library.
There are 12 bollards in, like, a 3 metre by 1 metre
yeah, that's,
space of pavement.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would do that. See, just put some trees. And then Tom Davis has also sent a photo, and it's a bollard with a sign on it saying, keep off the grass. And there is, again, like a half a metre by half a metre measly patch of grass underneath it, which is
think that this is someone from the council knowingly taking the piss.
Do you think?
I don't know. Well, it might be. Well, I always worry. I've told these stories on the podcast before, but sod it, they'll have to deal with it. There is a sign near me for the Barnsbury Health Centre. And a couple of years ago, they replaced the pole, a nice, shiny new sign. I've lived in that flat for 9 years. There is no Barnsbury Health Centre.
No.
Not within the last decade.
What?
So I assume somewhere there is a list of the council that just says, oh, this pole needs replacing, and they didn't bother to check whether... But honestly, I can't... I don't know where it was. I don't know when it existed. But there is... I found no record of it on Google. So it must have been quite a while ago that the Barnsbury Health Centre disappeared.
That's fascinating. So my last kind of campaign for trees over bollards is that all these cases of bollards being, like, placeholders for signs is crazy, because trees themselves have been signs in history. So... the Magna Carta was signed under this really famous tree. Trees, like, there was a whole charter of the trees that wasn't in the Magna Carta because it was so important. It had to have its own separate charter of people's rights. And that was about how common, like, people had access to the commons, and trees were part of that. So trees are symbolic, and bollards are just tools for other signs.
Yeah, but trees do push up house prices and therefore are bad. Nothing? Okay, we'll see you next time.